Jackie and I are joined by our pals Bromates World for some more shenanigans as we cover 1999's The Wood.
And Mackin.
Hagen and Mackin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the No More Late Fees podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Jackie. And we're just two best friends and ex-Blockbuster employees rewatching some of the best and worst movies from the late 90s and early 2000s. This week, we are talking about the 1999 movie, The Wood. But before we dive in, let's get into some housekeeping. If you love the podcast and you want to support us, here are a few ways that you can.
Don't forget to write us a review. We love compliments. We love them. They feed our souls. So if you want to be featured and help us grow, head to Apple, Spotify, Podchasers, iHeartRadio, or any of your favorite podcast platforms and leave us a review.
If you like what you hear and you want to buy us a virtual cup of coffee to say thank you if we made you laugh, head on over to ko-fi.com/nomorelatefees.
And you can also buy our merch. We have No More Late Fees t-shirts, shower curtains, rugs, stuff for the pups, stuff for the cats. Just head over to nomorelatefees.redbubble.com and check out what we got in store. But we're not alone this week. We are joined by our pals from Bro Meets World, TC and Siege. Welcome. We're so glad to have you guys back.
Hey-o! We're excited to just hang and mac with y'all.
Yes. Oh, what is it? Is it hanging and macking?
Hanging and macking.
If you want to get to know the bros a little better, go check out our online episode with them from season 3. It's a fun one. And Jackie, tell us more about The Wood.
Three old friends, Mike, Roland, and Slim, recount memories of their shared childhood in Inglewood, California, as they prepare for Roland's wedding to his fiancée, Lisa. When the groom goes missing without a word, Mike and Slim struggle to find their nervous friend and return him to his impatient bride before the wedding begins. Along the way, they continue to swap stories about lessons learned during their awkward teenage years. It stars Taye Diggs, Omar Epps, Richard T. Jones, Ray McCoy, Tamala Jones, Melinda Williams, and Fassis, Sanaa Lathan. It was directed by Rick.
It's your turn. I know. When we did Brown Sugar, I was struggling to say Rick's name.
Rick Famuyiwa. I'm doing the wee was now. Rick Famuyiwa. It was also written by Rick and Todd Boyd, and you can currently watch it on Paramount Plus. Okay, let's go ahead and get into our ratings rewind.
Well, it's not your first rodeo, guys. You guys know the drill. Before we get into the movie, we will reveal the rating our Y2K versions of ourselves would give. Then at the end, after we get to talking, we'll see if our current selves agree with our initial rating. Our scale consists of would buy it, would buy again.
The best, would play on repeat.
5-day rental.
Would watch again.
2-day rental.
Okay, but nothing to write home about.
And same day rental.
Trash. Straight up trash.
We're going to start with usage. What was your rating?
All right. Back in Y2K times, I watched this movie repeatedly with my sister. Maybe it was because it was on MTV all the time, because they used to play this movie constantly. But I watch this movie again and again and again. So my Y2K rating, which is different from my current rating, would have been would buy it again.
All right, TC. I know you're itching.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be like hypothetical about this because this is my first time watching this, but like I will say that I think I saw this VHS on the shelf in one of my family members' houses for forever, and I never reached for it. So I'm going to give it a two-day rental that, like, it would be something that if someone rented, I would watch, but I don't know that I would have picked it out myself simply because, I'll say this, I didn't think the trailer was very, like, engaging or grabby because I did watch the trailer before I watched it. So that would be my rating.
Well, we do have a category, never seen. So we're going to give you that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Never seen. Perfect.
There we go.
So no problemos. And I'm going to go with, I can't remember if I bought it on VHS. So I'm going to say 5-day rental because I don't remember because I don't have it on DVD. How about you, Jackie?
I watched it exactly once for the Taye Diggs of it all. So I'll go 2-day rental.
Taye Diggs of it all.
I can't believe you went Taye Diggs and not Richard T. Jones. That's what talk about.
It's that well, smile, man.
Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our pod pals.
Did you grow up with a lack of parental supervision? Do you know all the lyrics to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Remember Mayor McCheese and the Fry Guys? Have an inexplicable love for the California Raisins? Can you remember Madonna's original phase? Then you might be a part of the Doom Generation. Laugh until you cry with us each week as we stumble blindly through the memories of the movie and other random things that doomed us to be the salty, sarcastic, sardonic ladies you want to hang with. You know us. You love us. You can't fucking live without us. Doom Generation. Available everywhere you find podcasts.
Okay, we're back. Let's talk about box office. This movie had a budget of $6 million and it made $25 million. Now, the interesting thing about this movie, well, there's a lot of interesting things, but we did The Best Man not too long ago, and The Best Man actually came out 3 months after this movie, and it was kind of like a fight between the directors were very competitive about the movie. And I think because they were both Black movies and they both had weddings, and they both had Taye Diggs and Samal Lathan. Those were the only ties. But somehow people were saying, oh, it's the same movie. It's very different. Very, very different movies. But this movie was produced by MTV. So that's probably why you guys saw it on MTV so many times. And it actually got its pickup or help to get bought because of Sundance. So Rick went to Sundance and he said that MTV actually had the best deal. So it worked out because at that time, MTV was really making different movies. They had like the Beavis and Butthead of it all, but they were also making movies like Election and this movie. And so like they were trying to diversify their portfolio essentially. And this had teens and that was definitely their demographic and young 20-year-olds. So thought that was interesting. You guys ready to hear what Lil Raj had to say about this one?
Always.
Absolutely.
So Roger Ebert called it a sweet, lighthearted comedy and applauded, I'm just going to say Rick, I'm sorry, sir. I know I should be able to say your last name, but I struggle. I'm just keeping it real. Applauded Rick for capturing members of the cinematically marginalized African-American middle class. The movie feels a little uncertain as if it's moving from present to under the demands of a screenplay rather than because it really feels that way. Ebert wrote in conclusion, but the growing up stuff is kind of wonderful. And I have to agree.
I agree. Everything that he said.
I wish that it didn't go back and forth. Like, I wish that Mike kind of opened it, and then we got the young stuff, and then we started to see them in their older selves because I was getting whiplash. It didn't flow completely for me. In that way, I don't know. What do you guys
think? Siege mentioned Now and Then, and I think that movie does a way better job of going from past and present than this movie does. Because there's times where they'll jump ahead for what seems to be just like a minute or two before they go for another flashback. And it was like, did we really need that jump ahead? Especially when the story that's happening in the present time doesn't seem like it's that much story at all. Like, it seems like it's kind of stretched out compared to the stuff that was happening when they were younger.
Completely agree. I think that some of it is, you kind of need like the indication of why you are telling this part of the story at this point in time. Like, what are the reminders? What are the signatures that like are blending past and present? And instead, the movie just kind of sometimes decides that it's telling you like the rest of the childhood story, and you're like, but why? What themes are coming up that mirrored this? What sentence? And then again, sometimes they even feel like they are retconning, and they're like, oh, we're mentioning this because this is what happened when they were younger. But you're like, yeah, but you showed me the scene first, and then you gave me the explanation, so it feels out of order.
I think if they had made it where it was actually Mike who was getting married,
yes,
because his relationship seemed to be the core of it. So
yeah,
I don't understand what, like, I'm not having an emotional tie with Roland and Lisa. Like,
yeah,
I'm not.
We don't even get introduced to Lisa until the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah.
And it's played kind of like, it was weird to me because for those of you who do know anything about the 90s, Lisa Ray McCoy, like, again, it's like one of those 90s baddies, and it felt like it was supposed to be like a reveal, like, oh, and it's Lisa Ray McCoy.
Right.
And like, so they were holding it to give us that's who this Lisa that he was talking about, in a way of saying that like, he's unsure and it's someone as amazing as Lisa Ray McCoy.
Right.
But it doesn't work outside of that 90s context where you're like, I don't understand why I'm supposed to care about this Lisa I haven't met yet. And then when you do show me her, I'm like, okay, you know?
There's so much of this movie that feels like both American Pie 1 and American Pie 3 cut into one movie.
Ooh, that's a good comparison.
Well, American Pie came out the same year, and it's about kids trying to get laid. So like, it was a, like, the black equivalent, it felt like to me.
Yeah. It was just, so I agree, like, there were no transitions. It was exactly like this podcast where, like, the director was just like, I don't do transitions, so here you go.
Jack, don't say the podcast. People don't do transitions.
I don't do transitions. We've been trying to be better about transitions, but I still don't do transitions. But it was just like, why do I care that, like, I don't understand why he does want to get married, but he's also running to this girl's house that they know, but I don't know. And
correct. And the fact that we never meet the younger version of her, who is Tanya, played by, is it Tamala Jones? By Tamala Jones, who again, like, a lot of 90s casting, a lot of all like the same cast working in different projects together. So if you are part of the Black community, you recognize these faces. And I do want to commend the casting, because the casting of both the adult versions and the younger versions of these characters feel like dead on. Mm-hmm. Especially, I had already mentioned Richard T. Jones, who plays Slim, the older Slim, and then Dwayne Finley. The two of them make this movie for me. But that said, the fact that we spend all this time with Tanya and we never meet the younger version of her, even though she's constantly talking about their ties to high school, it feels like we're missing something.
Yeah.
Also, weirdly enough, they were going to make a TV show version. And actually, what's so funny is that they were trying to make a TV show of this from when the movie came out. And I think it was like 2021... they were still, in August of 2021, Showtime gave a pilot order to a TV show that was adapted of the film. And by 2023, they axed it, so it's not moving forward. But the people who were going to be in it were Richard T. Jones and Tamala Jones. So it's just like, just wondering what that was going to be about. But the casting that I know, the actors who played these roles were great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think any of these guys looked like each other, like the older version. And my biggest gripe is Melinda Williams was 28 when she filmed this. Why did they just not let her play herself older?
Yeah.
And Sanaa Lathan does not look a thing like her. And I wonder if she was dating Omar Epps at this point, or it was afterwards. Because... Go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing about The Wood that is interesting, and I'm saying this because I know Tony didn't watch it for, he said he, this is his first time watching it, and Jackie, I know you said that you watched it once. Mm-hmm. I don't know your relationship with Danielle, but as someone who, again, I watched this movie constantly as a kid, is it kind of always fell behind the other movies that came out, the Black movies that came out around that time. So to me, Best Man tells this story so much better, mm-hmm. and it's so much more intense and dramatic. It's telling a different story, but mm-hmm. like in terms of like you have a group of friends who are all preparing for a wedding, but all of these secrets are coming out about their childhood that influence them in the present. Best Man nails that. You have Brown Sugar, you have, what is another one I had, Love and Basketball, like all mm-hmm. of these movies are being made around this time, and The Wood always did feel a little behind
yeah.
for the rest of these. And I think some of the reasons is what we've talked about. The fact that like the narrative, although sweet, does feel kind of all over the place. And the casting, I think that they captured the energy of each other's characters really well. Like Taye Diggs and whoever plays his younger version of Rod, like, yes, I can see how this man turns into that man. You know, like, it worked for me. But in terms of looks, yeah, it wasn't the greatest. I mean, you had that really bad Jerry Curl wig in the part of the movie.
That's well. Tyler Perry level wig right there.
And to your point about like the, you know, Danielle, you were saying like, why did they cast an older actress for, you know, this actress who could have played it? It felt weird that we were doing this like cast age jump between like 18 and 28. It seemed like, mm-hmm. it seemed like such an odd thing. It seemed like they should have played younger versions of themselves for the high school scene and did that transition for when they got to high school. Like that, I think would have worked better than yes. having the younger actors play them through eight, only to jump ahead what seemed to be only like 10 years to have these brand new faces.
I honestly think they should have just made, what works for this movie is that it gives a real authentic childhood feel for Black boys.
Correct.
I think it's also important to say that this movie, when it came out, when it being about California and growing up there, it wasn't a gangbang movie, you know, from all the things that we had been seeing a few years prior. I think this was refreshing in that way, that we were seeing boyhood portrayed very innocently. Yes, there were themes of, you know, the gangbang lifestyle, but comedically, and also mm-hmm. separating that there were different people are living different lives. We're not a monolith kind of situation, which was very interesting. I do like that Rick, the director, talks about how, you know, California is not like LA, not like LA, not like Chicago and New York. It is very suburbs if you think about it. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of show that experience, I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say, to your point, I noted how important it was that they showed kind of like Black excellence and like the middle class of it all. That is Inglewood. Like we always hear Inglewood up to no good, but they kind of show that is part of the city. It's not that it's not there, but it's tangential, especially to like these boys' experience. And even with the main gangbanger that we get to meet in the movie, Stacy, they even kind of show how Stacy is a child. Stacy mm-hmm. is like a little boy playing gangbanger. And that's like, you know, that's the world and that's how he's involved in this, which I thought was interesting to watch with adult eyes, because I'm like, oh yeah, they go out of the way to show that this is a child, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just going to say that I feel like the movie is strongest when it's leaning into like Black Wonder years. Yes. Like when we're having those like throwbacks of like the first experiences of being a kid, my first dance, I got to learn how to dance. Like, I feel like like those stories, I think were like to your point about being showing a different side of the Black experience compared to A Boys in the Hood. I think that's where the movie is the strongest, kind of reflecting back on those nostalgic experiences.
Yeah, them just living everyday lives. You know, the drama is just them being stupid, not necessarily someone's trying to kill them or the hardships of mm-hmm. Black identity.
Yeah, it's funny because what you were talking about, Tony, the idea of the first dance or a lot of these first, I thought it was funny that they showed this dance is not popping. It is not like we are not getting kid and play house party level of production. This is just a regular like middle school gym with like some bad clothes and okay music, but to him this is Wonderworld. I like, again, when they show he's looking at girls for the first time, not that I feel like they should, but they're not showing like video vixens, they're showing like teenage girls, and he's like, my mind couldn't believe what I was seeing. I really enjoyed that part of it, of like the exaggeration of his mind being like, this is a childhood wonderland. And yeah, it does have tones of Wonder Years or even A Christmas Story in the way that he's seeing things versus what we, the audience, can actually see.
When the dance scene, the one thing I thought about, Jackie, that I wanted to ask you was, did you go to the Coral Springs Middle 8th grade dance?
Sure did.
Were we at the Coral Springs High School in the cafeteria?
I'm assuming that's where we were. I don't remember how I got there or where I was, but I was there.
I thought that was the best dance I ever had in my life. I had the time of my life.
We swayed to End of the Road. It was wonderful.
Come On Ride the Train came on. I lost my shit. That was my song. Jackie, we were in the same place at the same time, but we didn't know each other. How sad.
Aww.
Okay.
I still remember exactly what I was wearing. Yeah, it was a good time. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, good times.
But that was exactly the type. Yeah, yep. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in Inglewood or Coral Springs, Florida. That middle school dance looks exactly the same.
Yep. And one it was real dark.
One thing I will say about, like, the, you know, seeing it through a child's eyes, I thought they did a great job of showing like what it means to have a crush on a girl or be a new mm-hmm. kid or like things like that. But I will say that some of the way that like teenage and children's bodies were filmed made me a little uncomfortable while watching it.
First scene where
the butt grab scene.
Well, that too, but no, when he actually is just standing, he first gets there and there's these like two or three girls walking by and they looked like real children, and I was uncomfortable at how it panned to their butt, but mm-hmm. I was not comfortable with that. Yeah,
completely agree with you. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I pray they were older.
Well, and that was probably, I'm hoping that was a choice of casting an older actress in that role, the butt grabbing role, but I'm like, and I'm like, they're all little girls. They haven't gone through puberty yet. What are you looking at? Like,
well, their age, you know? So at that age, I think this movie is interesting because it talks about a very specific type and Black male experience in a very specific time. And like, you watch it now and you're like, oh, we would not, like, go and grab that girl's butt. Don't do that. Don't show that. Like harassment. None of this. But this was of a time. And the thing that I kind of want to give the movie grace for is it makes it very clear that these three are fools. They don't know what they're talking about. They, like, even when they're like, hey, you should hang with us, we know, like, we know the camera and the movie itself is like, these are idiots. Do not look to them for any guidance because they don't have it. And that's the one grace I want to give it, because there are lots of themes and scenes that don't hold up really well mm-hmm. in terms of like what you would want to show children today. But we can't pretend like that isn't what those Black boys at that time were being taught. And to me, it is a time capsule into how far we have come.
My mom, I think I watched this with her because I remember her saying, this movie shows how nasty these little boys are. They've always been nasty and they're always going to be nasty. I said, okay, Ma. But it was very much like the scenes where they're trying to get their girls to have sex with them. I was like, oh God, have these lines haven't been used on me in life.
You know, I want to talk about that for a little bit because, you know, there's so much of like, you know, I bet you can't grab her ass, or like the first one to get laid wins from the pussy pot or whatever. And I was like, I wonder how much of this is like boys actually being like that versus like us seeing the shit in movies and trying to emulate it, because I only know that side of it. I only know life post American Graffiti. I only know life post Porky's or post, you know, all of these movies where it was just like, you know, boys trying to get laid, where I feel like in my generation, like, because we grew up watching those movies, it was natural to try to emulate it, but I don't know if that has a true genesis, and I'm sure it does. I just wasn't there for it to really know, like, if boys are naturally like that outside of the influence of media.
I think it's important to note that this scene is supposed to take place in the mid 80s. And I think the reason why I'm pointing that out is at this point in time, we had a lot of movies came out. Like I had already mentioned Now and Then, Stand By Me, all these movies that are looking at childhood from a different time, but telling the story in the 90s. And even they were kind of like, this is my memories of how things were, not necessarily how things were for us in the 90s. And that's just like how I want to say, because you're right, some of it doesn't feel true to what we would have done, but the three kids talking to each other and not knowing what they're talking about, that I feel does hold true. That these kids having bets about absolutely nothing. Like, they will bet about anything all the time. It's constantly a bet. But also, like, not really understanding the value of a dollar. You ain't got a dollar? Like that whole scene of, like, having a dollar, having a pen, all this other stuff to get girls' numbers. And it's like, what are you going to do with that? What is your intention? Yeah. You don't really know where you're going with this. You're just acting.
I get what you're saying, TC, because I ask that question of myself a lot about so many things, like when it comes to what came first, the chicken or the egg kind of situation, because the same could be said about like how we are trained with gender roles, essentially. Like, how would we naturally be if we didn't have some of the stuff told to us or taught to us? And now, like when we talked about Quiet on the Set, we have to imagine that there are some real creepy people. And a lot of the times when we think about the movie industry and propaganda and what has been put in our faces and what we saw that they were putting in front of children has been happening for years. They're grooming us essentially to maybe be a little bit more sexualized, to be more open to things that maybe we wouldn't be. But because we're seeing it in a media standpoint, this is normal. This is what we're supposed to be doing. This is how you notice none of these guys ever, except for Alicia, that's her name, right? Besides his relationship with Alicia, none of these guys are really trying to talk to these girls. We didn't see anything about them liking each other, which isn't really that experience that most of us have when we first like someone. Yes, we like them because they're cute, but a lot of the times it's because, you know, we like the same things, and it's just so innocent, that first love that you have when you're young. So
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I questioned throughout the movie if, like, other than Mike, do Roland and Slim really like women? Even Mike, I'm like kind of questioning that. Like, there seems to be a lot of homoerotic tension between the three of them, just saying. They seem to be far more concerned with what their friends think of them than what women think of them, and their opinions of trying to look cool in front of their friends versus trying to be a good man for, like, you know, a partner. So I just had I had that question throughout the time, like, do they even like women?
They don't like the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's important to note, because that's like, even to this day, that is true to what we are talking about. Men are trained to do. They are trained to bond with each other and to compete with each other. And the actual liking of a girl is secondary. There's a reason why when he likes Alicia, they, all of their scenes are kind of on the sideline. Like, they don't really show intimacy and that they like each other in front of the other two, because he understands that I need to keep this separate if I want it to be special. If I were to parade Alicia around in front of them, I'm going to have to behave a specific way. They're going to say things that are probably going to make me choose to be disingenuous to her. And there is something to be said about the fact that that is what, especially at the time, we were training boys to do. And I think something about, you guys were talking about whether or not this was grooming or if this is like a story that they told to us that didn't really happen. I think that what we were getting were people who were telling their truths about how their childhoods were, but we can look back and be like, baby, you were emulating something you never should have been exposed to. You know, it's like you're trying to behave like the men that you saw in your life, but they should have never shown you that side of it. You should have never been trying to emulate that. Am I making sense?
Yeah. And I feel like had Mike not met these two bozos, he might not have, because that wasn't his experience. You know, he was living with his mom. He was very innocent. He wasn't thinking about grabbing a butt or anything like that. And that, or he wasn't bold enough to do it. But these idiots that he's friends with are exposing him to this kind of lifestyle. But I think that's the conversation we're seeing on the internet right now with women talking about, like, do men really like us? They're not taught to even think of women as whole people, you know? And there's one conversation where they're saying that a lot of men don't even end up with their type, or they don't date the women that they actually like, because the whole goal is to show off to their friends, or it's what other people are going to judge them on. Other men, they date for other men. The woman that's going to represent, like, what they value. And I find that to be very interesting.
And I think that actually, you know, when I think about the structure of the movie, I think the movie would have been far stronger if we just, like, were introduced to them as older characters in the beginning and spent the entire movie with them as young characters, because I would have loved to see, like, a difference between, like, hey, we were children then and we're adults now. If both Slim and Mike were in relationships and Roland was just the one being like, oh, you guys remember when we were young? Like, something like that to show that, like, hey, no, we've matured past that. But they're kind of the same assholes at the end of the movie that they were throughout the entire thing. And that was just like, I don't know if...
But ain't that the thing, though? Like, here's, like, I think what we're talking about, especially as, like, 20 years out, is we're like, I would have expected to see some kind of growth. And in reality, it's like, you may have been asking too much at that point in time, you know? Like, as we said, they're only like 28 or so by the end of the film. And I think that the structure of the film, the way that I looked at it this particular time anyway, was I was like, they aren't that much different, but it does show a sincerity in their relationship with each other. Like, what I mean by this is Slim, even though their behaviors with each other, Slim and Rod, their behaviors with each other are still very childish, Slim is constantly trying to get Roland to say that he is committed to this. Do you want to get married? You're saying this. Are you sure? He is constantly being like, you're getting married. This is something that you said that you want to do, so you're following through on it. So he is holding his friend accountable, but it's like they needed to, it's a thing where it's like they need to kind of check with each other first, you know? It's like, it's less of a Roland made the decision on his own, and it's more like Roland made the decision and they are there to help him commit
execute. I mean,
it would almost been better if it was like he was going to propose to Lisa.
Yes.
And they were checking in with him, like, is this because, like, hey, you went and got drunk, which you don't typically do with this girl. Like, are we sure these are the decisions we are wanting to make? Really, really? Like, the day of the wedding is a little too late, Roland.
It's wild. It is wild that he showed up at another woman's house drunk, being like, you guys got to get out of here because I'm trying to tap that. And it's like,
yes.
It's your wedding day. Like, we should be beyond any of this at this point. I understand trying to, like, show what cold feet would be, but this just seemed like he decided moments before the wedding that he was going to go through it, and it just, I had no attachment to him as a character because of that. He wasn't a likable character throughout the entire movie.
He wasn't, and I just don't understand how Lisa went through it, because you are embarrassing me. This is embarrassing. Like, my parents are here. My dad has to crane your neck at this point. My bridesmaids, like, everyone who I love is watching me panic to think the person who I'm supposed to marry is literally almost signaling that he does not want to be with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to point out that it's probably, like, really uncomfortable, but we have to admit that, again, this movie was made in 99. Which is almost a boys will be boys mentality. I'm not saying that I agree with it. I'm saying that everyone in the movie, even, like, the adults when they're talking and they're like, oh, you know Roland, you know Slim. Like, everyone's like, everyone is looking at these three boys like, we do know how they are. Like, it's not that we are expecting more of them. If anything, they are living up to what we do expect. And the fact that Roland does go through it with it is the quote-unquote growth. I'm not saying that it should be that way. I'm saying that the movie kind of paints this picture of, by them getting to the point of one of them getting married, they have achieved and done above and beyond, because everyone knows them and they know what to expect. Like, there's that scene where Roland is talking through the door at Lisa, and, you know, you have Mike trying to help and Slim coming in and saying all the things that he needs to, and everyone's like, oh yeah, like, the bridesmaids are like, you know, this is growth for them. This is advancement for them. And that's just kind of like how I feel this movie is saying. It's like, at the time, this was them being adults and being mature.
Ugh, trash.
It felt strange that, like, okay, so, like, when they're older versions of their teenage self, they finally have that conversation of, like, I'm never going to lock down. Like, you can't put a leash around my neck. And it's like, I felt like that sentiment should have been hinted at throughout the movie. Yeah. Like, maybe show that, like, Roland comes from, like, parents who fight all the time, or his mom got abused, or something, to make him, like, be like, I don't want that. Because to, you know, Danielle's point, we spend the entire movie strengthening Mike's backstory when he's not the central character or the central person of this issue. So it just feels like they could have done more to show that Roland was a person who was never about commitment. Yeah. And, like, you know, Mike says in his speech, like, you know, it takes the one woman to turn that around. But it's like, we didn't see any examples of that throughout the movie to support that argument.
It would have made more sense if maybe Slim went and disappeared, because I think what they could have centered was the ending of what would feel like the ending of their friendship. Or because you're going into this new era. And so you could see both guys trying to find the third guy, like, what the hell's going on, the responsible one. If Mike had been the one who, like, didn't keep it together and say what his fears were about this marriage, you know,
that felt like it came out of nowhere, by the way, when he was like, I was feeling selfish because I thought my friendship was going to end. I was like, there was nothing in this movie that led me to think that you felt that way.
Yeah, no. And I'll be damned if I'm getting married and my husband's best friend gets up there and talk about, like, y'all have made my wedding about your little friendship. Y'all have had this conversation in the bedroom before you came out here embarrassing. You already embarrassed me. This is just making it worse. I'm going to stab all of you motherfuckers when I see you after this wedding.
Yep.
Jackie, to your point, I think this story would have been better as an engagement story. Like, if we were watching him prepare to engage, to get engaged, I think it would, to your point, Danielle, not make it so intense to where we feel like he has actually betrayed his wife to be. Because getting cold feet before the proposal completely makes sense. And you would still have the entire family there. And you could still focus on the friendship. I think it is a little weird that we spend all of this time. We, as the audience, know that they are like going around getting pizza, hanging out. They almost have like a little mini bachelor party. You're like, you had 2 hours.
Yeah.
The 2 hours lasted forever. Like thank every time you. They came back to the future, they said, we still have 2 hours. I was like, what have y'all been doing this whole time?
Yeah. And dry clean. I got so mad at Slim when Roland was like, I need you to stop the car.
Yes.
You know that this idiot has been drinking. That's just common sense that he might throw up. Why were you so, like, I could say that Slim got on my nerves so fucking much. Irritation. Because
I loved him. I thought he was so, I know that character so much. That character is nothing but a sweet talker, always has something to say, loud, and just thinks he's the funniest person. And that, to me, made him funny. Not because he is the funniest person, because I know he thinks he is.
Yeah, he's
I never saw a movie make Taye Diggs so uncharming before. Oh. I'll say that.
I really like him without hair. When I go back, I talk about it a lot because now we've done like 5 or 6 Taye Diggs movies and we're doing like 3 this year. It's crazy. But I've noticed that baby boy looks way better with a bald head than with these little, like that hairline. Where is it? Where is it going? I don't know. He should have shaved it a long time ago. That's all I'm saying. Makes his head look small.
I agree.
I just, the other route they could have gone was Mike is getting married to someone else and they're reminiscing because Alicia was such a big part of his life. And like, are you really sure? Because like, we know she moved to New York, she made choices for her career, but is that not something you want to continue to pursue or something? Like that would have felt way more authentic than this kind of fluff hot mess we got.
Or, you know what was so fluffed too was like, you know, they'd cut to the future and they'd be like, remember when we stole Tic Tacs? And then they'd like flashback to like the whole story of them like doing the Tic Tac thing. Yeah. And I was just like, it would have just been better just to show us that without you guys doing the little like prep for that sequence. Yeah. Like that's what it felt like. It felt like there were sketches and then we come to the future just to prep for those sketches to be told.
I think to Jackie's point that it would have made more sense if they focused on like Mike getting married and Alicia, or they're preparing for the wedding or getting ready to go to the wedding. Roland didn't even have to run away. They could have just been like chilling in the room, reminiscing.
A bachelor party.
Something like that. Yeah, they're getting ready. They're just chilling. And then the focus is on Mike being anxious because he hasn't seen Alicia in so long. And then they're flashing back to their childhood and their relationship because there's this anxiety that the woman of my dreams, my love is coming and I haven't seen her in years. That would have been more interesting. You know, like it would have flowed
two different scripts of like, guys getting ready for a wedding and then kids growing up that they were like, let's just slice this together without like them really being that connected.
Well, it's okay. So it's semi-autobiography essentially that it's really about Rick and his best friend and his best friend getting married. So a lot of this is pulled from that experience. But his best friend claims, I never had cold feet. I did not do that part. But his wife said that the wedding of how it looks is almost exactly how their actual wedding was. So as for the
child, that's interesting for it being like a hot mess, it being like, well, I'm just trying to include as many details in my life as possible without thinking of it from a story perspective makes so much sense.
And then as for the like childhood elements, he said not much of it is he pulls from his childhood, like he moved from another place to Englewood, so that is true, but everything else isn't necessarily fully his true. Life, but I question.
I want to give the movie credit because even though I don't always think that this is a good thing, I do want to highlight it for this entire movie is kind of women putting up with men. And like even when they go to the dry cleaners, when they go to Tanya's, like everyone's just like, oh, you know, like they're putting up with these men. But even in their childhood, when we're looking at it and they're trying to get laid and they're doing all these things, it shows that the women are smarter than these men. And the women kind of like always know the angle that they're trying to play. And they even give Alicia the agency of like, I understand what's going on with Mike. But instead of like calling him out, I'll decide whether or not I want to participate. Whether, mm-hmm. you know, it's very clear that Alicia has a crush on him, but she plays it cool and she lets him kind of flounder and she comes in when she wants to come in. And I just wanted to give the movie credit for like being like, no, these girls were smarter than them.
Yeah, I think it does a really good job. I would say Alicia's character is not one-dimensional, which I appreciate. I appreciate that they gave her, like, she's not just the object of his desire. She seemed, mm-hmm. like you said, they make a lot of these women very intelligent, which, you know, doesn't really happen when you're seeing, especially teen comedies from a male perspective, which yep. is nice. Also, I appreciate that there wasn't any nakedness, because we did see, when we talk about American Pie, you see tits, you see...
Excuse me, there's so much male ass in the backyard scene.
That's fine.
Not mad at it.
So much. And with that, we are not complaining. If you want to talk about rewind, I forgot this moment until I saw it. And I was like, I have definitely paused this scene.
DC overruled.
Not a problem. We don't have enough ass and dick.
We don't.
You're right. More peen in the film. To see just point real fast about how he was like, you know, they're putting all of it on women. You know, one of the things the movie says is like, at the end, they're like, well, it takes a special woman to make a man change. But I just kind of hate that whole mindset that it's like a man can just be a fucking idiot forever. And it's on the woman to like make him change. And if that man doesn't change, that's because you weren't the right woman versus him not just like taking accountability and growing up. So I was really frustrated with that aspect of it.
Yeah. Nobody wants to do emotional labor to like just the positioning of women being like, we can't get equal rights, we can't get equity in life, but somehow we are the better of the genders, and that it's our responsibility because we're more mature or whatever nonsense that is kind of put on us to have to elevate men. And I think that's what's happening right now, that we're struggling with communication with each other and women saying, okay, I'm not trying to take on this emotional labor anymore. We're tired. And yep. we also don't have to, because we were depending on men financially. We weren't able to have autonomy in a lot of places. And now that we are, we're questioning, okay, well, what do we want from partnerships? What do we want to have in relationships? What does that look like? And now, where in this movie, we weren't having these guys have any, the standard bar was in hell. Mm-hmm. And yeah. now we're even asking for the smallest amount. And we're getting a reign of terror. Men are crying and upset. And we're just like, we just want us to like be partners. Sure. We're not trying to be better or worse. We just want us to like be on the same page. But if you've been benefiting from a broken system for so long, it's really, really hard to say that I need to change this.
Absolutely.
It's funny because this movie, in a way, doesn't reward the male characters for their behavior. Like, if we think about it, I'm not saying that it's good story-wise, because it does kind of feel like we're missing something. But when we see adult Alicia, her and Mike don't get back together. It's not like we see, you know, like, oh, they've rekindled their flame and now they're together again. No, she's moved to New York. She's living her own life. Again, even with Tanya, Tanya's like, oh, I have a man. You ain't coming in my house. Like, it does, you know, like, it constantly is showing all of these women get theirs and do what they need to do. And these men have each other. And again, like, it's a little mixed message because you're like, is this romantic? Are we supposed to want Alicia and Mike to be together? But at the end of the day, what it shows us is that Alicia was able to go off and be successful on her own. Mm-hmm. Tanya has her own house and she knows where to draw the line with these boys. You know, like, even if you want to make the argument, all of their mothers are not having any of their nonsense. You know, the movie is constantly not rewarding these men for their inability to do better.
Yep. I thought the Mike and Alicia thing was kind of open-ended. Like, I thought there was an opening at the end because he asked, like, he inquires about New York in a sense that, like, what's going on out there, what's available, like, almost like he was saying, I'm thinking about it or I'm looking at options. So I was like, oh, he kind of left the door open for that one.
But he's thinking about moving to New York. That's my point. True. My point is... Yeah. It's saying that he was the one who needed to consider making a sacrifice for her. And mm-hmm. and I think a lesser movie, they would have made Alicia be like, oh, New York didn't have what I need. What I needed was here. You know, like in a lesser movie, it would have had either Tanya sleep with Roland or have it to where like they catch and like maybe it almost happened, you know. Like, this movie just very is defiant in knowing who the women characters are and like where their boundaries are, but it also does kind of focus on these three men in a way that just feels, I think that's where we're all kind of like, what did you want me to take away from this?
Yeah. To your point of like not rewarding bad behavior, I will say that I liked that the reason why Mike was able to, you know, lose his virginity was because he took the time to like get to know Alicia as a woman and as a person. And like, it wasn't this like, you go give me blue balls. You know, it wasn't this pressure that led into it. It was like a human connection that led to it. So, you know, I
thought and that it was good. Her choice. She has all the power in that situation. She brings him home. She's like, do you have protection? Oh, it broke. Well, then if you want this to continue, go get another one. Like,
right.
She is very much like the dominant one in that whole situation.
She's the adult.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, again, like, that's why I said it's kind of hard because in some ways it's like we are putting the onus on these Black women to be more mature than the men. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it's good that we show a young Black woman actually speak up and say, no, this isn't happening. They're not just one, though. All of the Black girls that they try are smarter than them. And they're just like, I'm not, like that one girl who's getting fingered. She's like, I'm getting mine.
That's actually a contrast from when you see these other movies where women, there's constant sex. These girls are constantly just giving it up. And there is no, like, you don't see those conversations. You don't see any kind of friction. It's very easy for them to be having sex. So I did like that. I like that he struggled with the condom because it's like, I think men and boys need to see that like movies make it seem so easy or and talk about that. It, you know, you should know how to put a condom on before you start go mess around. And when he lasted like 5 seconds and you could see on her face, just reading that scene, she said so much without really saying much. Yeah. And she didn't embarrass him for it. Even though she was like, what the hell did I just get?
I had so much respect for her not embarrassing him, but I also thought that he deserved to be embarrassed because when they first try to have sex, this boy's trying to fuck with sneakers on. In the bed. I was like, you have respect for no one at this point.
But again, it's his hubris, which is because like one of the more famous lines from this movie is this supposed to look like that? And I get what it's funny is he's like, yeah. And like, that's his answer for everything. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing, but like, he's so confident with it. Mm-hmm. And he's just always like, yes, it is. And I think that go ahead.
Resolve, and every like scene is just like, yep, like we no matter who's questioning me, if I'm in the right, if I don't know shit, I'm just gonna be confident.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite parts of this movie, which isn't really about the sex stuff, but I love that when Stacy is robbing the convenience store, he stops to just have like a casual conversation in the middle of it. And I just thought that was so hilarious.
I love Stacy's character.
I do too.
He's great.
Stacy is an iconic part of this movie. Like, I think I thought he was in more of the movie because of how iconic the character is, and it's so well played. And again, for me, I was able to see kind of how childish he is in like I think you forget, especially when you see gangsters in like movies like this, that they're also supposed to be like 17, yeah. 18 yeah. years old, and you really get that sense without it being like, mom, you know, like where he's like yelling at his mom to like do his laundry or whatever. You can tell that this boy is living in the environment that he's living in. He does what he has to do, but he's also still very childish, but he's also a really good brother, and he can see the difference between Mike and Roland and Slim. He sees the difference. He takes the time. He's rooting for Mike when Mike gets his sister. You know, he's like, yes, I want my sister to be with someone who actually likes her. And I see that you have guts and that you have something, you have character in a way that other people don't. And I want to reward that in the way that I can.
Yeah.
I thought it was super cool because I do love the movie Dope. So that's the other movie that Rick made, and that there's a tie-in because Stacy is in the movie and he's playing a security guard at a high school that the kids go to. And so you kind of see that, oh, he makes it in life. Like he's grown, he's learned. And if you haven't seen Dope, we'll never be able to cover it on the podcast, but you should definitely check it out. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, I love Dope. I watch it. And again, that little shout out of seeing Stacy again is fantastic. Because you do, like for me, when I watch his character, you're like, man, I hope you get out of this. I hope you.
Yeah. No, I was like, hoping he would have been at the wedding at the end, honestly. Yes. I would have hoped that he would have like formed a friendship with them after this. You know, like there would have been some kind of continuation to his character.
Yeah, it is kind of weird that the last thing we really see of him is like his botched attempt to have sex because Mike was under the bed. Like that's a really poor way to leave that character because he makes such a good impact, and he very clearly, he had depth in a way that I feel like we all want to know more about Stacy.
Yeah. He was the dipshit older brother more than he like kind of lovable in a way, more than a gang member.
When she slapped him, I felt that slap. Mike pinched her butt, and then she's like, I'm gonna tell my brother, and then her brother comes and whips his ass. But you know, Mike getting that one good hit on him, I think that's really what he was bragging about when he introduced Mike to his friend. And I just thought, man, how your sister gonna dog you out if you're trying to show her respect and like help her out, and then she's gonna slap you like that. And he got upset, but he didn't react in a way I thought he was going to react. Which was nice.
That scene has a very funny line where he goes, I saw a hand coming from heaven. Oh wait, no, that was his fist. So that was really funny. And then also, T, as you pointed out, while we're in the convenience store and they're very clearly robbing it, when he goes, Stacy? I was like, don't say his name. Like, what are y'all doing?
He was like, y'all want some snacks or something? I'll give you a ride. Come on.
And again, Slim, like, ooh, I was thirsty. It's like, boy, you
want to
get in this car?
Slim is so stupid.
I love when the cops pull them over and Ooh's sitting there crying in the front seat. And that is another testament to how young these kids actually are. And they're trying to act tough and stuff, but really, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And I'm like, oh, poor
I also thought it was really important in that scene that like both of the cops were black. Like, mm-hmm. it didn't, like, bring a racial component in it. It just showed, like, what happens when you're young and dumb, and it kind of took away that other layer of it that I think we were able to just see them as kids versus black kids.
Yeah.
Well, I will challenge that because we are still in LA. This is still Inglewood, and yeah. the LAPD, specifically at this time, we do know. And we can see the way the cops, like, we know that these kids just robbed a convenience store, but the cops don't know that. So they are harassing these kids for no real reasons. The way that he kind of like handles Stacy and then like wipes his hand on him and all this other stuff, it is still disrespectful. And we, again, the audience knows that they are guilty of something, but the cops don't. They don't really have any reason. And I think that that to me was important to show that A, they were black cops, so it's not just like a racial issue that it's going to happen. It's cops versus this community.
I thought it was interesting how, like, I felt so nervous when the cops pulled him over. And it's that element of they're still kids. You could tell that Stacy is trying to, like, be cool and chill, but you could see the fear on his face. Mm-hmm. It's surprising how well Mike actually does in comparison to his homeboys who are always talking shit. And it always turns out that way. The ones who talk shit are like ready to cry.
Like, but ain't that the way?
It is. But that scene, I was actually nervous for them. And so I'm glad he put that scene in because that is a reality for so many. That is a part of a black teen experience for especially a black male. To be pulled over, and how much more you're pulled over in comparison to your counterparts, which is, you know, unfortunate.
My one thing is, he says, while they're in the middle of robbing the convenience store, let me give y'all a ride to the dance. So again, they are giving way too much information. But I was like, how far was this convenience store?
Yes.
Because they said it was right around the corner, yet we see you driving for so long and enough for you to get pulled over, and then we still have the drive to the school. Where was this convenience store?
I was surprised. I was questioning that too. But also, did you guys notice in the convenience store scene when they're older, when they go in, that the three men behind the counter are actually the director and his two friends, the Slim and the Roland of his life?
I didn't know that.
Easter egg.
Yeah, that's a great
Easter egg. Because you, like, if you watch that scene, you're just like, why are there three people behind the counter? Why are they just standing there?
It made more sense for them just to be other patrons of the convenience store and not all just standing behind the counter.
Waiting in line would have made way more sense.
Well, I was just like, I had to look, I was trying to look up and see what I could find because, again, not a lot of fun notes for this movie. And I thought that was cool.
Which is that in the dance sequence, we see a young Christina Milian.
Yes.
And I called, I was like, is it Christina Milian?
Yes, she looks so young in that movie. And I don't think it's her first movie, but it's got to be one of her first movies. It's like, look at her, little Christina.
Little baby.
let's talk about the soundtrack. I know you guys have been dying to talk about it. This soundtrack was fire. And again, we were eaten during this time period. We had all of these wonderful black movies and they had amazing soundtracks. Now, I know that you mentioned, TC, you mentioned the Joe song.
Yeah.
So funny fact about that is that Joe was having issues with his record company. I think it was Jive at the time. And that song, that song was supposed to be on his 1997 album and he couldn't get it on. It wasn't included. And so when they were looking for music for this soundtrack, he was like, oh, you can have this one. Like, it's like a throwaway song, essentially.
Wow.
And then like that's when it hits.
It's like one of his biggest hits. Wow.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So the soundtrack was released July 13th, 1999 by Jive Records. And it peaked at number 16 on the Billboard 200 and the second spot on the top R&B hip-hop albums chart, and it went certified gold by August 25th, 1999. So only in 2 months it went gold. Think about that.
Wow.
That's crazy.
It was a golden era for soundtracks. You know, I think I mentioned this on our podcast that, you know, amateur Black filmmakers are the reason why we have movie soundtracks. Like, you know, in the 70s when they were doing indie Black films, they couldn't get promotion for them. So like for Shaft, for example, they were like, let's just put together a soundtrack and release it ahead of time for promotion for the movie.
Ooh.
And then like that started gaining traction, and to the point where when Saturday Night Fever came out, they were like, oh, we got to do that. And you know, the Bee Gees obviously were huge on that, and so it snowballed from there. But it was originally just indie Black filmmakers just trying to get their movie promotion, and it still works. It worked all throughout the 2000s too.
Not surprised.
I will say I want more of the, like, I was like, where is the MTV movies? Like, I want, yes, more movies that are telling stories about teenagers and children and that have really good soundtracks. Like, I feel like, yeah, we've lost that art of like making music for a movie, having it go all together. As you said, we ate in the 90s. There are so many really good soundtracks with really good artists that became like iconic songs.
Mm-hmm. I think, I hate to say it, but I don't think we're going to get those back again because, nope, of streaming. It's just not the same. Streaming music, streaming movies. I do see a shift in how it's like something similar. You know, some of my favorite teeny bopper shows that I secretly watched, not secretly, like The Summer I Became Pretty, I will go then to Spotify and listen to the soundtrack of the show or whatever. It's just a different experience. It's happening, but in a different, like, it's not, I don't know if it's going to be the same. They would have to make a commitment to doing that, and I don't know if they are. Also, I think we're not universally having that same experience at the same time because we all have so much choice. Yeah. You know, when it comes to movies, people are in their silos now. It feels like it is rare that we are all having a community experience with a piece of media anymore.
Rare, but not impossible. Barbie had a great soundtrack.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. It's not impossible. Yeah.
I was going to say, I can still want it. I still want it.
No. I'm not. I'm just saying that, like, it is a disappointment. It sucks. Yeah. But what the Barbie movie did was it went back to old school marketing. It did actual marketing. And we just see that these studios are become very lazy about that. Also, they want things to just go viral and that's it. Like, that is their marketing plan, and we all know that's not how that works. So Barbie, people should be looking at how they did Barbie, but they're also thinking, oh, well, Barbie put a lot of money behind their marketing campaigns, but it was just smart how they did everything.
And it paid off, though. Like, as you said, I think the problem is they want to be lazy and they want to like put in as little effort as possible and still get things. And as we said, like with movies are like in the 90s or whatever, you had to put in effort. You had to curate a soundtrack. You had to promote the movie. You had to get really good talent. Like it says something that a lot of the actors in this movie are really big names now, or they had really good careers after this. Like you have to put in the effort if you want your movies to be talked about 20 years later. I also think it's something that I correct me if I'm wrong, and if anyone else has an example, I can't think of another movie we've gotten in a while that does the both the younger version of the cast and the older version, like in one movie, where you are telling two stories, kind of like Stand By Me. Well, not even Stand By Me, but like Now and Then. Like, I just can't think of a movie.
Can I tell you the best one in recent memory that does it is The New Edition.
Yes.
Like that biopic. It's a series. It's not a movie, but they do it so well in terms of showing the young and the old.
And they got the hottest, like young actors to play like the older versions of them. Like, these are the it boys in Black TV and movies. But I was disappointed because I think it's only three episodes, right? It wasn't a long one. Like, bring back the Temptations.
If you count the Bobby Brown movie, a spinoff, then it's a little bit longer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But that is, like, the thing is, I thought of that movie when we were talking about transitions earlier, and we were talking about how they should have, like, transitioned the younger
such a great transition
to the older. That is, like, if you watch the New Edition movie, that transition is iconic, and it's so well done. Mm-hmm. But also, it helps you connect with the younger cast and then the older cast. But also the thing about that movie is it's kind of old-fashioned VH1. Let's make a movie about a band. It's very Temptations. It's very Jackson's American Dream. Like, that was the style that they went after to replicate. And by doing so, they gave us a classic movie to fit in that pantheon.
The remake of It.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I feel like the kid actors were way more likable than the adult actors in that series. So,
but I think that's the point, because they're so traumatized by the time that they're adults that even the old Stephen King It miniseries, I don't think I really liked the adults as much as I liked the kids.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
I just don't think they had the chemistry that the younger cast had.
You're right. They really didn't. But yeah.
Do y'all think it's because we don't necessarily, like, again, us, the four of us kind of being the exception, people aren't really friends with people that they grew up with anymore. So, like, maybe that's died out, and therefore you don't get this, like, storytelling of, like, this group when we were children and then the same group when we're adults. Because I'm wondering, like, if there's something about just the way that we have our friend groups now that I'm wondering why we just don't get stories about, like, friend groups then and now like we used to.
You're right. It's capitalism. It's individualistic. Like, everyone needs to focus on themselves. We all live apartments by ourselves. Like, that whole thing of, like, it's just you and your silo has just been pushed so hard that it's made its way in media, and now we don't have that.
And, like, because we're so connected with social media, it's like, oh, I don't have to go to a high school reunion. Like, I've seen everyone. I know what everyone's up to. Like, there
isn't that. I was just thinking about that. Like, how no one, like, there's no need to, like, call up someone and be like, yo, how's so-and-so doing?
Yeah.
Like, that was so regular conversation back in the day that I just feel like it's like, well, you saw their Facebook update. You saw their Instagram update. Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
You do call, but it's like, hey, did you see who was getting divorced? Like,
yeah.
That's how you did. You just have your side conversations. But the information is provided to you through those social medias.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things about this movie was the fact that you're seeing men having a relationship as friends, Black men. I think we get a lot of Black female movies about friendship and community, but we do not get to see a lot of it with male characters, and especially not from a childhood standpoint. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's always really fun.
And it wasn't a competition. Like, they had bets, they had wagers, but it wasn't like they all liked the same girl they were trying to go after. There wasn't that competition to it. It was just their friendship. Hey, Danielle.
Yep.
You know how I'm always getting on to you about fidgeting while we're on the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, I found something that is going to change our lives. It is a product called Conquer Ring, and it is a ring that fits on your finger like this.
Uh-huh.
And you can snap it and play with it while you are sitting and talking, and it's not distracting. It does have a nice little click.
Do they have different designs too?
It is highly customizable. You buy the ring itself. You can pop this piece out, and ooh, then you can purchase other designs. Some are spinners where a secret message will show up as you spin it. They come in circular designs, diamonds, hexagons, even this cute little wave design.
Ooh.
If you have a person in your life that fidgets, has ADHD, and you just need something that they can keep on them, fidget while they're working or doing schoolwork, or podcasting, head to myconquering.com and put in the coupon code Jackie10, and you'll get 10% off your first order. I just love it. I've had it for a couple of weeks now and can't recommend it more.
Nice.
Check it out.
Yep. Well, why don't you guys tell everybody your social handles before we get into our new ratings?
Oh, you can reach out to us at Brum Meets World on all the places. That's Brum Meets World on our YouTube, on Twitter, Instagram, all the places. And you can check us out at Brum Meets World on Patreon as well.
And you guys can hit us up at No More Late Fees on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Threads. And I will start with you, Siege.
Okay, my current ranking, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, no. So this time I will say, as much as I said I watched this a lot as a kid, I'm going like 2-day rental this point in time. I was like, I get it. It didn't age as well as I would have liked, just because I do think there are other movies that came out around this time that do it so much better. I like The Best Man better. I think Love and Basketball and Brown Sugar and all those are way more iconic versions of this, but it's still worth watching.
TC?
You know, one thing I didn't say that I just wanted to mention was that the movie opens up with both Mike and Slim talking directly to the camera, breaking the fourth wall in such a way that was so cool. I was like, wow, that's a great narrative device, like treating the film camera as like the wedding handheld camera, and you're talking to us. Like, I thought that would continue throughout, and I was really disappointed when they dropped that, because I thought, wow, that would have been really cool. But outside of that, I really don't, like Siege said, there's nothing about this that makes it super memorable for me. So for me, I'm going to do same day rental.
Jackie?
I as well am going to go same day rental. If I just got the childhood story, I would have been happy. I didn't need to know that there was a wedding or anything. I just want to see the stories of them growing up and experiencing what it's like to live in Inglewood in the 80s. So, yeah, same day.
I'm going to go 5-day rental. I'll watch this again.
Okay.
I'm definitely in between a 5-day and a 2-day, but I really, like you said, the childhood element for me, I really like it.
And the man buns.
I do like the buns. I like them a lot. And I just like the nostalgic feel of it. Yeah, I don't know. 5-day for me.
It's funny. We kind of hit on it, but you get to see Taye Diggs in all his glory. Mm-hmm.
You can Google it.
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting to be able to see.
I like it.
Not mad at it.
That's how Stella got her groove back, y'all.
And you see why.
So if you have any feedback for us, you want to sing us a little of I Want to Know by Joe, or anything else you can think of, hit us up at our quick drop 909-601-NMLF. You can twat us at the Twitters, hum us at Threads, and you can be featured on a future episode.
And join us later this week for a bonus episode with Siege and TC. And don't miss our rewind episode of 13 Going on 30 next week.
And y'all, thanks for hopping on. It's always a pleasure. You are welcome back anytime. We love having you. It's like our little boys club version of No More Late Fees. Y'all are on.
Love coming on. If you guys have any movies that you think we would contribute well to, please think of us. You guys are so much fun to talk to. It just feels like we're at lunch just jibber jabbering. I forget that we're even recording sometimes, so you guys are the best.
Yeah, honestly, I have nothing to say, the exact same thing that Tony said, which is that we enjoy doing this. We enjoy talking about movies with you guys and are excited to hear what else you guys have going on, because I'll be listening to the 13 going on 30.
And as always, be kind and rewind.